Welcome back, everyone. This week's episode interview with Jaran Mellerud, who is CEO and co-founder of a hosting company called Hashlabs. Hello, Jaran. How are you doing?
Hello, Jesse. I'm doing very well. Thank you a lot for having me here.
HashRateUp, hardware sales, advisory, hosting, and site brokerage. Find new and used ASIC deals through the website and the Telegram channel below. Make smarter decisions with HashRateUp. My pleasure, man. Thank you for making the time. I know you're very busy. Before we get started, let's have a quick look at the mempool. We are recording at 925559 block height. We have a hash price of currently, $39 about. We're still at 1.1 zettahash, roughly. And the last difficult adjustment was about -2%, so that's a bit of a reprieve on hash price. But with 11% in the current epoch, we're already hitting the target again. So that doesn't spell good news for anybody on the brink of profitability. Jaran, you do a ton of research in the space. You're not just offering hosting, but some people, I mean, you've been in the industry for a long time. You've worked for Luxa before that, I don't really know. Now you've started your own thing and found your foot in the industry. And I want to talk to you about a couple things and not just cover sort of one topic, but get your view on multiple. But before we start doing that, why don't you give 30 seconds highlight on what Hashlabs is and does, and where you guys operate.
Yeah, so Hashlabs was started by my co-founder, I would say, Alan. He's from Kazakhstan. Started a company in Kazakhstan after a long career as a commodities trader for Glencore. And he wanted to take the company out of Kazakhstan, make it an international company. And then we got in touch with each other at the perfect time. And we decided we start working together. So we source cheap electricity hosting locations in different countries, focusing primarily on markets outside of North America, because North America is already very well covered. So we're looking more outside of that and trying to help miners find places outside of North America.
So what places are you guys covering, and which place do you think outside of America that you cover offers the best price to risk ratio?
So we have operations now in Ethiopia, Finland, Norway. We're also doing a project in Indonesia. The Kazakhstan site is shut down, as most sites in Kazakhstan right now, but we're thinking what to do with it. Maybe we'll reopen it because we see some new opportunities there. But overall, of all our locations, Finland is definitely the best value for money, or I would say best risk-adjusted return, which I'm always looking at. Ethiopia is, as people know, it's quite risky and electricity prices are going up. It can be an option for people still, but I would personally rather mine in Finland, and also Norway can also be pretty good if you just manage to find a place.
Norway, yeah, for sure. A couple sites for sale there. All right, cool. So I want to talk to you about Finland. Let's start there. Maybe first question on that topic. Yesterday I spoke to Daniel Johnson, who also operates in Finland in a different capacity, and he we were talking about demand response and low power pricing and heat reuse, obviously, which is something that you guys do. Same question to you: in Finland, can you do heat reuse and demand response at the same time, or if you sell heat to the district heating network, do you need to be online all the time?
You practically need to be online close to 100% of the time. So our uptime so far in Finland, we have five sites, it's like 99.8% since the start in, on average. But there are some demand response programs. I can't remember them off the top of my head, but they are allowing you to have quite high uptime. So just shut down for a couple of hours maximum or so, few minutes. And you can do that while delivering heat, because the heat is anyways delivered by water, and that is stored in a tank, basically. And from that tank, it's going into the district heating system. So there will still be a lot of hot water accumulated in that tank. You just need to not be shut down so long that that tank becomes cold, basically.
Okay, fair enough. And then I guess you can also temporarily overclock the miners to make up for the lost heat. Is that an option?
Yeah, if your infrastructure allows for it, of course you can do that. But in general, you don't want to run the machines at too high temperatures. We provide water at 80 degrees, and that's so we're kind of running them at the maximum capacity by default.
Okay.
So we can't really go any higher than that.
So what machines are you guys running that can do that? Because I know that's a very critical limitation that only a few machines are able to provide, right?
Yeah, we using the Wattsminer hydro-cooled series, M63S and M63S Plus. And in Norway, we're also doing a heat reuse project. There we're using the M63 vanilla. And it's only the Wattsminer that can actually produce 80 degrees Celsius hot water. I know that Canaan can do it too, and we're looking at the opportunity of using Canaan as well. But we for sure know that Bitmain cannot deliver that high amount temperature water. So that's the situation.
Is it an option to run the pump more slowly and increase the water temperature that way? Or is that not a feasible solution?
It's not really a feasible solution because the machines need, or the district heating site needs a certain amount of energy in forms of hot water. So if you run the pump at too low speed, then there will be less water delivered.
Understood. And what's the general sentiment for you in Finland? I know, you know, people are talking about a mining tax for those who don't do heat reuse next year. But then, as Daniel said in the last interview, you know, we're used to that in our industry. You know, there's always some politician talking about some tax coming for Bitcoin miners because they don't like it and they try to spread a bit of uncertainty. What do you think, like the future, you know, is what do you think about power pricing in general, security, price security? Do you see Hashlabs operating in Finland in 5 years from now?
Yeah, so first of all, the base power costs in Finland are quite good because Finland has electricity surplus because they have a very, very large nuclear power plant that came online in 2023. It's the, I believe, the first one that opened in Europe since in the 2000s, actually. And they also have a lot of wind power, so base power prices are expected to stay low. Of course, if the Russia-Ukraine war stops, maybe that will lead to even lower power prices, not only in Finland, but in the rest of Europe too. So it's looking not so bad from the pure power price perspective. There will also be a bigger need for demand response in the future as more wind power coming online and mining can provide that. That might lead to some demand response revenues as well that you can tap into. When it comes to heat, yeah, district heating sites are paying for the heat. I don't expect that price to increase because it's kind of correlated with energy prices in general. And with regards to the electricity tax, it's always different information circulating. From next summer, I believe, they're going to add that power tax, but it's still a lot of open questions. For example, if you reuse the heat, maybe you will be exempted from that. So there is still a lot of open questions about how miners will be impacted by that power tax.
Interesting time. How much room do you see for growth there? How much sites are there, capacities available? What do you think?
Yeah, so in Finland, I believe that there is no point to mine unless you can reuse the heat and actually sell your heat. Because if not, you operate at like, let's say, 5 cents at best, maybe 6 cents. You need to sell your heat. And luckily, Finland has a large amount of district heating plants that need heat and are looking to reduce their fuel consumption of primarily biomass. And they're interested in that heat. So there is a I don't remember even how many megawatts, but it could be up to 1 gigawatt of these plants out there who need heat.
Wow.
So there's for sure a few hundred megawatts of potential expansion in Finland alone from mining with district heating. When it comes to just like grid connected sites in Finland, I believe that that will decrease. And I don't see a big future for that because the base power price is just not so super low there.
Do you see a gap or a niche for like 70% uptime, highly tuned to demand response, to counteract all the supply from the wind farms temporarily? Do you see that as a resolution? And then cheaper power prices? Because that's, I know, sorry, I'm asking because that's what Daniel was describing. And he was talking about power prices way lower than what you just said.
Yeah. I haven't really looked into it and done that analysis, but I do know that in Finland, periodically power prices can be negative in the spot market. So if you can run at a 70% uptime, maybe you can achieve an average power price at like, I don't know, 1 or 2 cents. And this is what is done in parts of the US, in Texas. Yes. So I would assume it can work in Finland too.
Because there's not too many places, and we can get to that now, globally, right, where you sort of have different business models for miners, right? There's either grid mining or there's not, and then there's maybe demand response. But in Finland, you've got the heat reuse angle, and if that's true, the demand response angle as well, which is a completely different setup. You know, in the US, you've got mining on gas, mining on grid, demand response, heat reuse as well in some places. So it's a big variety of available business models that are there. And I kind of, and maybe you can confirm this as a last point on Finland, I kind of get the feeling that Finland, and I think I'm like an eighth Finnish. I have no idea, but I think so, that they don't give too many cares about what people think, what choices they make. And the nuclear reactor is one of them, right? Every, like, you know, people are like, okay, no, nuclear bad, nuclear bad, nuclear bad. But Finland is like, okay, no, screw that. We're going to open it anyway because we need the power. Do you feel the same sentiment operating there, or is that false?
Yeah, they kind of done their own thing historically, and they're kind of people who just want to be left in peace in their forest and like and at their farm and don't want any intruders. And they do their own thing, and which is a good thing for miners. But unfortunately, Europe is quite tightly connected, or fortunately for some people. But this means that, of course, the negative sentiment from the EU about mining is also hitting Finland. And I know that the Finnish government, at least parts of it, is very against mining. And but this is just like it is in the rest of Europe and Norway and Sweden as well. So,
yeah. Okay, fair enough. And okay, so on that topic, where do you think mining is going? Because I'm having a lot of trouble understanding where mining is going. And I'll give you a brief overview, right? Africa is basically non-existent. I'm trying to change that, but it's very difficult. Ethiopia has just set an example as of how not to do it. I know Nigeria is on the upcoming, and there's a lot of private power there, so that makes sense, right? Then we have East Asia and Asia, which is either a black box for me that I cannot look into. And East Asia, I don't know. I think in most places like Malaysia and the Philippines and stuff, power is quite expensive. LATAM, Argentina, Brazil, maybe. Paraguay, not a lot of growth. America just had the whole tax thing, so it's very expensive to buy miners there. Canada on gas. I just don't, like, I have a, I know the two biggest mining countries are the US and China, right? But where do you see sort of mining shifting? What's the next big play in mining?
So I do believe that margins will be squeezed over the next few years, maybe forever in mining. And because if you look at the fundamentals of the industry, it has virtually no barriers to entry. Like, anyone can plug in a miner. So if you apply that Porter's five forces analysis and look at it that way, you will see that mining is destined to be a very competitive industry. And we have the halving coming in 2028, which will not make it better. So, of course, I do believe in a Bitcoin bull market like everyone else in Bitcoin. And what is unique now is that, or it's not unique now, but we are in that point of cycle where people are kind of losing a bit faith in mining. And we see very low investments right now in mining. And that means that if you buy miners now and the Bitcoin price goes up, you might get a period of super profitability in the next like 1 or 2 years. But yeah, over the long term, I think margins will continue to be squeezed, and that will force miners into, there will be two main models in the future. In the West, there will be miners who integrate very deeply with energy systems, and there you can get some margin there, profit margin. But then essentially mining becomes the secondary benefit of your business model. Like the main benefit is you solve some energy problem, and then the income you get from mining is kind of secondary. And the second model is like more large scale sites, which I believe will shift to the southern parts of the world, like Southeast Asia, certain African countries, and yeah, I don't know about Latin America, but in these countries, there will always be someone very close to the government who actually have access to buying electricity at a lower rate than the rest of the market there. And they can just decide to use that electricity for mining. We even saw that happened in Kazakhstan last cycle. Some people close to government could mine at an extremely subsidized rate. And of course, how can you compete with them, you know? So I believe that these guys are the miners of the future, at least in these countries. And I think a lot of retail miners are going to be squeezed out, but I still see big profit potentials if you buy miners now, just because hash rate will not grow that much.
Buying Bitcoin miners should be simple, safe, and fast. Altair Technology delivers exactly that. Based in the US and shipping directly from St. Louis, Altair eliminates all the shady messaging groups, customs and tariffs issues, and makes sure Bitcoin miners get to you on time. Altair stocks leading commercial ASIC miners, efficient home units, and all the critical parts you need, backed by real inventory, real support, and a team of people that you can rely on and actually mines Bitcoin. Thank you so much, Altair Technology, for supporting the show. And without further ado, let's get back to it. So a couple questions there, right? Margin squeezed, retail pushed out. What does a sales call for you look like when you sell machines? What positives do you highlight? Because I understand, look, and we will talk about a few other things here. Me, just like you, we don't like the bullshitting. No, we both know we cannot sell people mining Bitcoin at $55,000 cost because we conveniently forgot that the machine also costs something, right? So we don't do that. But then I always have that fine balance of, you know, how do I make a sale for people who for people that mining makes sense to, and how do I make sure that those who just want passive income and never hear anything about it, that those people don't buy a machine because they won't be satisfied with the result. What does a sales call for you look like that sort of walks that fine line?
Yeah, so I don't really do any sales calls. But if people ask me about mining, I just tell them whatever I think at the moment about the market and the long term. And I assume that they just want to mine. Like I just tell them, I just show them where they can do it and how they can do it. And then it's up to them to decide if they want to do it. And there is enough companies in the market who is hyping mining. Like, I don't need to do that. They already seen all the posts on Twitter and LinkedIn of people hyping mining. So I don't need to do that for them, you know.
But I mean, we don't want the clients to go to those guys. We want them to buy the machines from us, right?
Yeah, but I do believe that they will search information from more than one source. And yeah, I think they ultimately will want some more honest opinion on things.
Okay. Couple things to go through. First of all, fees. Where do you see fees going until the halving?
Yeah, fees are always difficult to predict, but I believe they will stay at a fundamentally low level. And then we will see some periodic spikes from, I like to call it, or I don't know, blockchain, like spam on the blockchain. So we saw this with ordinals and BRC20s. They're not like fundamental drivers of fees in the long term, but periodically they pop up and lead to some good periods of high fees. And I think we will see the same, but on a fundamental level, fees will be continue to be low. And yeah, they are like 0.01 Bitcoin or something per block recently. That is not the norm historically. Like since 2020, fees have been 0.35 Bitcoin per block on average. So whenever I do financial models, I always plug in 0.35 Bitcoin per block, because if you see this high period fees with like 3 Bitcoin per block, 5 Bitcoin per block, this small couple of percent of the blocks are really driving up the average. So you have to remember that when you do the financial models.
Okay, understood. ASIC prices, low, high, how do you think about, like, when you buy machines, or if you were to buy machines, how do you think about the pricing? Do you look at it in dollar terms or in Bitcoin terms? How do you go about that?
I always look at everything in dollar terms, and I only look at really two numbers. One is the estimated payback period, and that should be definitely lower than 2 years, ideally significantly lower than that if you want to make good profits. And then I look at the cost to revenue ratio. So I want to see how big margin do I have before I need to turn off my machine. I want to have a significant safety room, because I don't want to just buy a machine and then after 3-4 months I need to shut it off. You know, you need to withstand the bear markets so you can make a profit in the bull market. So that's the two numbers I look. And right now, machines are, I would neither call it a buyer's market nor a seller's market, because I believe that machines are priced at a significantly higher level than they should right now, and that leads to much lower sales of machines, and eventually the machines have to be priced a bit lower. But we've seen recently they dropped the prices, which is good. But yeah, I know ASIC manufacturers not selling much at the moment, so they will have to drop the prices over time.
Do you think, so the hurdle rate for any mining decision for me is always, you know, could I have bought more Bitcoin, and does the extra risk warrant the amount of Bitcoin that I may have extra at the end of my mining period, right? And so that's why I always like to price my miners in Bitcoin terms. Do you do that? Do you think that doesn't make sense? I'm happy, I'm, you know, whatever you say is cool, but I just wonder about ASIC pricing in Bitcoin terms, because I know you analyze deeply.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I don't know why I don't do it, but I definitely think it makes sense, and I agree with your perspective that if you mine, you should get more Bitcoin than if you just bought Bitcoin, because I try to think about this in many different ways. Maybe mining is a different type of investment. Maybe you should be happy if you just make 20-30% return. But essentially, you're so much like mining is so correlated anyways to the Bitcoin price. So it makes sense to measure it against Bitcoin. completely.
Right. One angle why some people buy machines and don't just buy the Bitcoin is because they owe the IRS money and they can fully depreciate miners in year one. One of your favorite topics. What do you think about this whole CPA angle? Because I mean, we talked about the, I know you like to call them hosting bros earlier, and the stories they tell. And here's why I wanna know your perspective, right? I'm all about telling people what I think is right. And for instance, I don't think it's right to tell them, hey, you can mine Bitcoin at 55,000. Again, same story, by forgetting what the ASIC costs, okay? By just allowing for the electricity cost, not any other costs associated with the hosting experience. And I think that that is very easy for us to debunk. We understand that very well, okay? I am not a tax guy. I don't understand American taxes, and why would I? That's not my core business, right? So I think that that mantra of, hey, you can fully depreciate your ASIC in year one, is very hard for me to look through. And I have talked to people about it, you know, maybe understanding that I'm not, obviously I tell them, you know, I'm not a tax advisor or whatever. But I guess I'm keen to hear your thoughts around it and why you think that that's, and anybody who follows you knows this, is, you know, is another sales tactic. Because I'm always keen for people to have the full picture, obviously. So yeah, go ahead. Give people your rundown. Why do you think that this full bonus depreciation thing is not making sense? And then I have one question to maybe challenge that.
Yeah, so the whole background is that in the US you can use what is called bonus depreciation and depreciate your full value of the machine in the year you buy it, and thereby you will lower your taxes in that tax year. And that is completely right. And if you do mine, you should definitely use this trick, because the time value of depreciating everything in year one and paying lower taxes then is definitely valuable. But the question is, does that timing benefit, does that make up for the fact that you will pay more taxes in the later years from the mining activities? And I did some analysis. I analyzed the 10 years of taxes for a person making $1 million before mining. Strategy one, he invests in mining, applies bonus depreciation year one, investing 1 million, then he can remove the whole tax liability in the first year. That is fine. And year two, or strategy two, that is the...
Wait, yeah. So sorry. A person makes $1 million a year. Let's say they have, I don't know, 30% tax rate, right?
Yeah.
That means they pay 300,000 in taxes. Right. So to reduce their tax bill to zero, this is very important. They must not invest 300,000, but they need to invest 1 million. Why?
1 million.
Because they need to reduce their income, their taxable income, to zero as well, which is not realistic because they need to live. Right. But for the sake of this example.
Yeah. Before the hosting bros start to correct us, let's use 35% as a tax rate, because they always want to use the number that makes sense for them. But even if you do that, it doesn't really make sense. And so that's strategy one. And what will happen in that strategy is that you can theoretically eliminate the taxes in year one. But from year two, your miners will work and they will generate revenue. Yes, you can remove electricity and you will still have a profit that is taxable, which is coming on top of that 1 million you would make each year from without mining. So that means that your taxable income increases each of these other years than year one. And of course, that means that you need to pay actually higher taxes than if you simply bought Bitcoin, because if you just buy Bitcoin, yes, you can't depreciate that Bitcoin, but it will not generate any taxable income. It just sits there. And it's a non-yielding asset. It's essentially, as long as you not liquidate it, you have no taxes to pay on that Bitcoin. So then you have to ask yourself, does that time benefit of paying no taxes this year justify paying higher taxes in all the other years? And that is no. If you use a reasonable interest rate of 7%, then it is definitely a no. And these hosting bros, they like to use the example of just rolling over the investment. So you can do the bonus depreciation in year two also. So you buy the miners again, a little bit more miners this time, because you want to eliminate that taxable income from the mining too. But you can't do sustainably just keep buying. You will end up with the biggest mining operation in the world one day. Like, snowball. It's just yeah, it's a snowball. It's an exponential, it needs an exponentially increasing investment in mining machines. So one day it will stop and you will be left with a massive tax bill that will be so big that it will remove any of these time benefits that you got earlier. So, and it's also a lot of work to do mining compared to just holding Bitcoin. So I don't think it's a viable strategy at all. And I believe it is greatly exaggerated how beneficial bonus depreciation is. Like, my viewpoint is that if you do mining, you need to use bonus depreciation, but it's not a big reason to be a miner at all. Like,
yeah. BitX, solomining.de, got it. Premium, made in Germany. You want to go fancy? Go for NerdX or NerdQX++ for a lot of power. Worldwide shipping, check out solomining.de today.
So the pushback question I have, Jarn, is people do this with other stuff, right? They buy real estate and then they rent it out and they have income from that. They might buy two trucks to do that and have cost that way. And I mean, that's also a non-cash flow yielding asset and it just loses value over time. So, and my feedback that I've given was always that say, look, you can, if, and this is, there's two types of people, those who understand Bitcoin and those who don't, right? And if you're a business owner who understands Bitcoin and you would buy, instead of buying a truck, you buy miners, I think that's the better choice. Also because it's more scalable, right? You can start this strategy at $5,000 or $3,000 or whatever the machine costs. And you don't have to, at minimum, spend $200 on, I don't know, a piece of real estate or a couple of cars or whatever, right? So that's where I think the debate starts. And then obviously you have hash rate instead of just Bitcoin, and that's a commodity. And you can maybe sell that to somebody else at lower profit margins or something and be creative. But I do agree with you that it is, like with all things, more complicated than what it's made out to be. It's not as simple as, hey, you're buying your machine at 30% discount, you know, or 35%, yeah. Excuse me.
Yeah. And this is also why I recommend to read the article I published yesterday on the Hashlabs blog. Because it's quite complex and you have to dig very deep into it. I had to spend a lot of time to just sit and think about this for it to make sense for me, but it was always feeling like it didn't really make sense. But I do agree with you that if someone already wants to just spend away their business profits on some something, then miners is better than most of these things. But It goes back to the fundament. You don't want to just spend away your profits so that you make zero profits and have to pay no taxes. Then that's what will be left for you then. So
it's a bit like, but it's a bit like reinvesting in your business. It's also, right, if I take my profits and then I reinvest in my business to make more profits next year and then do it again, It's the same sort of snowball effect that we talked about earlier, right?
That's true. But I believe that if you have excess cash, and you should just plow that into some asset that will grow over time, like Bitcoin. Even some stocks are not giving dividends, and then you will not have to pay extra taxes by owning these stocks. So I would much rather do that than buying mining machines. And I will just give a very quick example from Norway. In the 80s, it was a shipping boom in Norway, and you had all these brokers running around trying to get people to buy the ships, and they created some special structure similar to this, where you could use some kind of bonus depreciation to depreciate your entire investment in year one. And this just led to big losses for a lot of people. And people had to continue buying these ships from these ship brokers in the next years to enjoy this tax benefit. So I think this bonus depreciation, it's being used to just sell more machines to people who are not really, maybe need to some other reasons to mine, and not just because of this depreciation thing. So I think it's a very aggressive way of selling something which is very expensive. And I expect a bit more from people in this industry. Just I can't say that I'm perfect either. I also said a lot of stupid things, but these are very expensive assets that people spending their life savings on. So should not just try to get them in by claiming this bonus depreciation will definitely reduce your taxes, because in the long term, it's not true.
It's always a fine line between making a living and keeping, having morals is very expensive. Let's just put it that way, right? All right, Jaren, this has been a very full episode. We need to do a quick round of rapid fire, and 35 minutes have already passed, which went like 5 minutes. So that is a testament to a good episode. Quick rapid fire, you ready?
Yeah.
Cool. Most undervalued ASIC model right now?
It's the K Pro, I believe. It's especially the one with the low hash rate, 110T, 115T. Those are very cheap right now and undervalued.
Bitcoin fees over the next cycle, higher or lower? I mean,
Definitely higher than they are right now. The average will be much higher than they are now, but not at a very high level.
Best region for miners in the next 24 months?
If you're just looking for a place to plug in, America. But if you're looking to do a long-term project where you can make much more money and much higher return, I would try to find something in, let's just say, in a developing country.
Stacking versus mining over a 4-year cycle, what wins?
In most cases, stacking wins. But if you have access to a very good hosting rate and buy the machine at the right time, then mining can make sense.
What is a good hosting rate?
You need to be for sure around 7 cents or lower. Above that, it's difficult to make a good profit in the long term. But yeah, it's also you also don't want to just pay 5 cents and get a very bad provider, you know. So yeah.
Risk adjusted pricing, big thing on this channel. Hash price average in sets till halving. Right now we had 41,000 sets per petahash per day. What's the average until the halving, do you think?
I would think around the level which it is at right now, and most likely, because price will go up and hash rate will go up a little bit at least.
You in my camp, I had to eat my words before, where I said, oh, it's very difficult for difficulty to jump up again, because 100 exahash now is a lot more difficult to add than it was 5 years ago. And then I had to eat my words 10 days later. Why do you think, last question, why do you think that hash rate growth is limited?
So first of all, there is a limited demand for buying new machines. And in the last cycle, most of the demand has come from America, especially from the public miners. And we see that they completely stopped making new orders and making plans to expand their hash rate. And they're like 40% of the market, and they're just stopping buying machines. So that will lead to much less growth. And I will also be honest to say that we are seeing less demand from our customers in the last few months. People are buying less machines in general. So people are just not so bullish anymore. And people don't think mining is so cool anymore. So yeah,
hash rate. I'm trying to change that.
It will change automatically when the Bitcoin price goes up.
Don't say that, Jan. It's all because of me. All right, man. Tell people where to find you and Hash Labs, and then we'll close it out there.
You can find us at hashlabs.io, and you can find me on Twitter at Jaran Mellerud.
All right, guys, you know how this works. Likes, comments, subscribes, all this good stuff. Helps me show my sponsors that this content is valued. I hope to see you next time. This was Jaran Mellerud, co-founder and COO of Hash Labs. Hope you learned something new. See you next time. Thank you. Bye.